For more than a decade, Saturdays and Illegal Curve have been synonymous with one another, with insight, analysis, and interviews regarding the Winnipeg Jets, the Manitoba Moose, and all around the NHL. Here are Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg, and your host, Drew Mandel. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, kickstarting a very busy Saturday for us. Jets and the Sharks later on tonight, 9 o'clock puck drop, with a post-game show to follow that. The Moose have their season opener a little bit later on tonight or this afternoon in Toronto as well, and we're here for the next couple hours getting you set for the Jets game and for a completely busy day. I am your host, Drew Mandel. Ezra Ginsberg is in the top right. Dave Minuk is operating the show off of his phone because, God forbid, he prepare more than 5 seconds before we go live. Why don't you explain what the problem is, Mr. Minuk?
Well, everything was fine until Ezzy suggested I restart my computer. And then, unfortunately, I restarted my computer and there were obviously some updates that needed to happen. And as a result, we're currently operating off my phone.
There you go. Well, good morning. And thank you for being as professional as we would ever expect us all to be. Ezra, it's rare that you're more professional than Dave, but I'm going to give you the kudos that I can't give to Dave on this Saturday morning.
Yeah, I appreciate it. We're a little bit slow here in the morning because we were binge watching Squid Game last night. So both of us had a sleepover.
Were you guys there together? So. Like, were you watching Squid Game together last night? You guys?
Yeah, we watched the entire series, all 11 episodes. I have no idea how many episodes there are. I haven't watched it yet. It looks extremely creepy. I know that you watched it, Drew. I'm afraid to watch it. But yeah, we're ready to go here, boys. It's hockey all day. We got a Jets game coming up later tonight, late tonight at 9 o'clock Central Time. Going to fire up the post game show again, and obviously hoping the Jets get back in the win column. But I know you want to talk about Squid Game, Drew. So let's go.
Laura watched it way more than I did. I sort of just caught an episode here and an episode there, and I would agree with you. It definitely seemed to be quite creepy and not really my thing. But Laura said that she enjoyed it, so take that for what it's worth. So it looks like Winnipeg Chaster in the chat says that Squid Game was awesome. So he's all in on it as well. So I'm sure
you were eating calamari while you were watching it
as well. True,
right?
That's true. Yes, exactly. That was my Squid Game. That's exactly right, what it was. But I'm sure you're going to see more than one Squid Game Halloween costume over the next couple of weeks. So I'm sure that'll be the costume du jour, as it were. Let's get started talking, of course, about the Winnipeg Jets. One game in, it was a loss, as we all know, on Wednesday night to the Anaheim Ducks. Then they had Thursday off, and they got back onto the ice yesterday as in part of practice ahead of tonight's contest against the San Jose Sharks. Another home opener. The home opener for the Sharks will be tonight, of course. The Jets, are looking to get back on the right track after what you would say would probably be missed opportunities would be the story of the game on Wednesday against the Ducks. The Jets had an opportunity to take an early lead, early power play opportunities. They weren't able to capitalize. And then the Ducks were able to capitalize on their chances. And before you knew it, the Jets just couldn't get back into the game. They never led, or they never tied even the game after they trailed it 1-0. And that really was the story of the contest on Wednesday night.
Yeah, and obviously, guys, we're probably going to mention Mark Scheifele's return several times during today's show, and obviously we'll be talking about it after the game on the post-game show, but, you mentioned it, Drew. I mean, the Jets played pretty well. I would say that they controlled the play for the majority of the game, especially in the first period with those two power plays, but it's kind of funny. I'm not sure if the Sharks are the last team to play their first game, but they're probably one of the last teams to play their first game. It's kind of weird because the season started back on Tuesday, but I mean, this Sharks team, I think there's a lot of similarities between the Sharks and the Ducks, maybe aside from, the goaltending, which obviously you'd give the edge to Anaheim with John Gibson. I believe Aiden Hill is going to get the start tonight. I'm not sure if it's confirmed, but it's probably going to be Aiden Hill.
It is, yeah.
The Sharks team, I think the similarities start on the back end. I mean, you're going to see familiar faces, right? Brent Burns, Erik Karlsson, Mark-Edward Vlasic, I believe, is going to dress. He's on the third pair. And boy, has he fallen from, being an Olympic, participant for Team Canada, on the back end. And now he's kind of, the fifth or sixth defenseman on San Jose. Mario Ferraro, is in there. He's paired up with Burns on the first pair or the second pair. But you're going to see a lot of new faces, right? Like guys like Alex Barabanov, and you're going to see, you know, Jonathan Dahlin, and you're going to see William Eklund, who was drafted seventh overall, right, guys? We thought he might be a top five pick, you know, going back to the draft in July. So this Sharks team is kind of similar to the Ducks in the sense that it's kind of a mix of veterans and rookies and second year players. I mean, this is a rebuilding team, guys. Like, let's not kid ourselves. The Sharks are not expected to do much this year, right? Like, I think you guys would agree, if the Sharks squeak into the playoffs this year, that's probably going to be one of the biggest surprises in the NHL, right? Like, you've still got, you know, guys like Logan Couture and Timo Meier, Tomas Hertl. I mean, you've still got some pretty skilled players there, but you know, it's one of those teams that once you get down on the third and fourth lines, it definitely starts to thin out.
Yeah, the San Jose Sharks, to your point, exactly right, Ezzie. The San Jose Sharks are a team that the Jets should expect to beat and beat relatively handily. That being said, I mean, you could have said the same about the Ducks on Wednesday night, and we know how that played out. So that's why the Jets need, I think, Dave, you're looking for a better start. I would say the first goal in tonight's game, and I know it's important in every game that they play, but particularly tonight, especially when you play against sort of young teams like that, that you want to really not even give them the opportunity to think that an upset is in store for them. So the Jets really, I'm expecting them to come out very similar to how they came out on Wednesday night, because they came out pretty good on Wednesday night against the Ducks. You can't say anything bad about their start. They just weren't able to get anything past John Gibson. Tonight, you're facing a goalie who is not in John Gibson's caliber in Aiden Hill. Young goalie, you know, was played the last few years for the Arizona Coyotes, and really has only been there. You know, he had 19 games last year, 13 games the 2 years before that. So this is a young goalie, pretty untested in terms of being a quote-unquote number one. Him and James Reimer are the two goalies they have in San Jose, and you can probably say that's one of the, you know, that's one of the goaltending tandems in the NHL that you have lesser confidence in. So I think a good start for the Jets tonight is essential to get them feeling good about themselves and not really even giving the Sharks any optimism.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's worth noting that John Gibson's out, has an injury that's sustained. I'm assuming it was with the Andrew Kopp hit, although I saw a picture with when Pierre-Luc Dubois and him connected behind the net, but I suspect it probably resulted from the Andrew Kopp bowling him over in the crease. So the Jet, that's relevant, of course, because the Jets play the Ducks two more times in the next, you know, few weeks. So will be worth noting for Jets fans that they may not be facing John Gibson, who clearly played a fairly good game for them in game one. I mean, it's you had a good start against the Ducks. You played against a hot goaltender. You know, there's some things the Jets are going to have to clean up. They're going to have to get way more traffic in front. I think that was one of the things that, you know, was evident in game one, is that you need that person who's willing to be in that front of the net and really in that dirty area. You know, the Ducks did it, and the Ducks had, you know, they were tipping pucks, and it's one thing. Jets just seem to be looking for that perfect goal, and they're just too talented. Like, I get it. Like, you know, you want to feed, you don't want to be a puck hog. You want to feed the guy, like Pierre-Luc Dubois wants to be a distributor, and that's well and good, but you can't be passing up like a grade A shot to, you know, try and make that perfect seam pass to set up the goal. I mean, that's one of the things. I think that if the Jets can just fire pucks on net, have someone in front, I think that's going to be a big difference. And yeah, I mean, what Fritchie is saying right there, I think that was one of the other notable things that came out of practice yesterday, as reported by Mike McIntyre and Murat Attes, who are both there, is the fact that Perfetti is still, you know, we weren't sure, right? When Mark Scheifele came back, it seemed likely. I mean, look, when Cole Perfetti was on the third line, in place of Christian Vesalainen, which seemed to be the way it was going in preseason, you thought, okay, well, that's something. Because if you're only giving him one game, why, again, are you upsetting the apple cart? I know the lines are going to be thrown off anyways because Mark Scheifele wasn't there. But it seemed like an interesting decision to keep Cole Perfetti on that third line as opposed to the fourth, where he could be interchangeable with, you know, whether it's Harkins or Svechnikov. But to do it this way and to keep it rolling, and again, I thought he played a good game. We didn't see a lot of him because of all the special teams in game one. He played just under 10 minutes. But I think, to me, that's one of the biggest things for you know, to take away from game one of the regular season was the fact that you know, Cole Perfetti played on third line, practiced on the third line yesterday, and looks like he's going to get his second NHL game playing on that third line. So I think that's probably one of the most interesting things coming out of game one was, before we get too much further into the San Jose analysis, was the fact that Cole Perfetti is still on your third line.
Yeah, it's certainly, you know, I think that, you know, I agree with you because I sort of thought it was going to be almost a one and done for Perfetti, or that he'd, you know, obviously, the, you know, stay on the road trip, go to Minnesota, and then, you know, come back from after the Minnesota game. That would be when you'd see him maybe head down to the Manitoba Moose. But he didn't look out of place, you know, certainly on Wednesday night. And, you know, and look, talent is talent. And if he can keep up, and if he's got, and if he's not, if he doesn't look like he's out of sorts, then why not make it a 2 or a 3 or a 4 game audition, and then you see where it goes. I mean, there's no reason not to if the guy is able to contribute, and if the guy is able to, you know, keep up with the Joneses, as the expression goes. You know, let the good times roll if you're Cole Perfetti, if you're the Jets. I mean, it is certainly not like them to do so. I mean, if you remember back, I guess, to Scheifele's first year, he had that great preseason, and then he got, you know, the I don't remember exactly how many games it was, 7 or 8 before they've sent him back to the OHL, to juniors. Obviously, we know Perfetti's not going to juniors. He would go to the Moose. But, you know, I sort of appreciate that the Jets are not, at this point, at least to start the year, not really worrying about burning that that year of the entry-level contract, or, you know, and again, I think I've said this before, we put too much emphasis on burning that year of entry-level contract as opposed to when he earns that full year towards free agency. Because you can burn a year of entry-level after 8 or 9 games, whatever it is, but that doesn't necessarily mean you earn a year towards free agency. I think that comes at the 40-game mark. So you have even extra time before he gets 1 year closer to free agency. And that's really more of the tipping point. But we're a long ways away from that really being a function or being something to worry about. Right now, you know, Paul Maurice is saying, look, you played well. You deserve to have another shot in the lineup. Let it be tonight. Go have a good game against the San Jose Sharks. And then we'll see how things play out over the coming couple days or weeks even.
Drew, you mentioned it earlier. I think that is, you know, a good point that you make about, you know, they're on the second game of a road trip. So, and there's two days between games, right? So I think that's a factor. Not sure what happened with Dave. Maybe he's going to switch back to his laptop.
I think that's fine.
Yeah. But, you know, I think, you know, that line is really intriguing because you have so much skill on that line and such smart players on that line, right? We know how smart of a player Stastny is, and obviously Lowry has just been a staple of, you know, the third line up the middle for, I don't know, it seems like 10 years now.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, Perfetti absolutely deserves it, as you mentioned, Drew. And, you know, we'll see what happens against Minnesota. But I think another factor that I wanted to mention here is that, you know, I think a consideration for Paul Maurice was the team they're playing, right? Like the Sharks, it's their home opener. There's a lot of young players. We talked about, you know, William Eklund. We talked about Jonathan Dahlin. Jasper Weatherby is another guy I wanted to mention. You know, when I used to go down to UND and watch games.
Well, you can start going next month again.
Yeah, I might actually go if we'll see what happens. But Weatherby's a guy that was a standout at UND, big boy. He's about 6'4", so I believe he's going to center that fourth line. So there's a lot of young players. So I think, you know, in that type of game, Dave, you know, I think Paul Maurice feels confident in not that, you know, if the Jets were playing the Wild, I'm not saying that, you know, the Wild are a more veteran team, but I'm not saying that, you know, Paul Maurice wouldn't put Perfetti in against the Wild. I'm just saying that, you know, maybe that decision was, you know, a little bit easier considering the competition. But, you know, I do think, you know, it's telling because Evgeny Svechnikov, right, boys, is the odd man out here. He's not going to play tonight. We assume he's
No, we don't know that yet.
Yeah.
We don't know that yet. But based on the line rushes, Svechnikov.
Well, there was the four guys rotating through for the three spots on the fourth line.
It's basically Svechnikov or Vesalainen. I mean, they're not taking Harkins out. So.
Right. Yeah. Harkins, I mean, my best guess would be probably Svechnikov, but you're right, Dave. If it's not Svechnikov, it's obviously, you know, going to be Vesalainen. And I don't think Jansen Harkins is going to come out of the game the way he played in the opener against the Ducks. So it's going to be interesting to see with Scheifele back down the middle. You know, these are what we expect the lines to be, you know, at least for the beginning part of the season, right? The lines are going to change guys on a weekly, if not, you know, nightly basis. But you know, you're gonna have Scheifele, Connor, Wheeler. We know what we're gonna get out of there, and Dubois, Ehlers, and Kopp. That's another line. And going back to what Dave was talking about, I agree. At times, Dubois was too much on the periphery, and he does have to drive that net a little bit. You saw that in the preseason. But sometimes, for a guy, you know, that's coming off of a bit of a down year, not a bit of a down year. It was a down year for Dubois. He is going to have to get a little bit greasy, and he's a big man. He's got to go to the net and, you know, tip pucks, or, you know, maybe one goes off of his knee, something like that. I mean, that's the way hockey is sometimes. I mean, Dubois's got a lot of skill, but sometimes when you have that, you know, that frame, you got to use it a little bit more. So I'm going to be curious to see if he's on the power play as well.
And this should be a game where Pierre
the first power Dubois play, Drew, is what I meant to say.
Yeah, yeah. And this should be a game tonight that Pierre-Luc Dubois and the other Jets veteran players should be able to impose their will against the San Jose Sharks. I mean, this is a Sharks team, as you talked about, you know, a few minutes ago, that is very young. They're starting, I think, about 5 rookies in their lineup. So, I mean, that is almost unheard of, you know, in this day and age in the NHL to be that young and that inexperienced. And that's why it's incumbent on, you know, Scheifele, who I'm expecting will be, you know, champing at the bit to get out on the ice tonight after missing the playoff series and, you know, missing the first game. I expect Mark Scheifele to look like absolutely, you know, be a force out there. You know, Blake Wheeler, you know, should be a force out there as well. A lot of people, I know it's only one game, a lot of people unhappy with the performance from Blake Wheeler in that first game against the Anaheim Ducks. I'm sure Blake Wheeler himself would probably say that he was not very good against the Ducks, you know, taking a couple penalties. I think if I recall correctly, he had the Jets' lowest possession numbers at 5-on-5 in the game on Wednesday night. So I expect Wheeler to be a force tonight. And Dubois, I mean, this is a time where the guys you're paying big money to, the guys that are your veteran guys, the guys who are really, you know, the drivers of your team, you know, whether or not, you know, Wheeler is still considered a driver, but he's the captain of the team. So you know what I'm saying there. This is where you need to come out. You need to impose your will and you need to be better than your opponent. And that's what I'd expect to see from the Winnipeg Jets, certainly early in tonight's game. Anything less than that will be, I mean, again, we're not, I almost ordered a panic button, just but I decided not to just yet. But you're not going to press the panic button, but it is something you'd want to see. You don't want to go be down 0-2 heading to Minnesota for the third game of the 3-game road trip, which is, and the Minnesota game is considered to be the hardest of the 3 games.
Yeah, for sure. And I, you know, there's a lot of interesting, you know, comments as usual in the chat section. And, you know, I don't mind the idea of Cole Perfetti playing on the second line. I think that'd be a very interesting look in place of maybe Andrew Kopp, because I think he's got, you know, so much more offensive potential. And I think, you know, the idea of putting Perfetti with Dubois and Ehlers and setting those guys up, I mean, that'd be quite an exciting prospect, literally. So I think that would be, that'd be very interesting. You know, I like the idea of playing guys in the roles you expect them to play. Sometimes that gets lost, right? And, you know, for years we heard Jack Roslovic was going to be a center, and Jack Roslovic was going to be ultimately the replacement, you know, the heir apparent for the second line center role for Brian Little eventually, when Brian Little would slide down. That was obviously the prevailing thought for many years. And then Jack Roslovic, you know, for the last 10 games of the AHL, played on the wing. And you're thinking, okay, well, why is he going from where he's played all, you know, all of his pro career and on the wing? And then suddenly he's now a winger. And so that's what they did in the NHL. And in that similar vein, with a guy like Perfetti, do you really want him? I understand you want him with veterans like Lowry and Stastny and give him an opportunity to develop. But, and I'm not going to, you know, to your point, Drew, about that panic button, you don't want to panic and say, okay, well, Andrew Kopp had one game. He didn't, you know, produce. So, you know, you immediately have to change it, because obviously based on the way the preseason went, Paul Maurice wants to see what he's got with Kopp, Ehlers and Dubois. So he's not going to do that right now, obviously. But I just think, like, it'd just be interesting. It's an interesting thought exercise, simply because I like the idea of Perfetti. I think, you know, he's got so much more offensive potential in that top six role than, you know, simply just trying to kind of tread water on the third line, maybe get an opportunity. But, you know, your third line for years has been an effective shutdown line. And so that's what you get when you have Andrew Kopp. And sometimes, I'm not saying that he can't do it, but, you know, is he better suited for that partnership with Adam Lowry, and then having a guy who's a little more offensively minded in a, you know, whether it's Perfetti or someone else in that second line wing will roll. Who knows? We'll see. Maybe they're just trying to balance it out, which, like, it seems to be the case. But I just think, like, not for necessarily, like I said, not for the first couple games, because I was, you know, championing the idea of, like, you don't start to blow things up after one or two games. You have to give it a little bit of a sample size to see what you've got in these lines and in these deep pairings. But, you know, eventually, if it doesn't start to work, you're going to have to start to think about that. That is possibly one of the changes they'll make.
Well, yeah, and I wanted to just jump in and say something, you know, kind of touching on what Dave was saying there. I think, you know, you always have to remind yourself that it's game two of 82, right, Dave? And then you also have to, you know, factor in that this is a bigger game for certain players, right? Like, it's obviously going to be, you know, Drew mentioned there's five rookies. I think it's Jake Middleton is the defenseman that's also going to make his NHL debut tonight. He's a 25-year-old defenseman, so he's going to be on the third pair. I'm not sure if Mark-Edward Vlasic's going to be paired up with him or if Vlasic's going to be on the second pair. I'm not sure, but there's going to be five rookies.
If you read your show plan, Ezra, you would know that it's going to be Mark-Edward Vlasic and Erik Karlsson, and it's going to be Middleton and Simic for the Sharks. It was right there in the show plan for you.
The pairs have changed. Vlasic during the preseason was on the third pair. I don't think
But this was our buddy Curtis Pašalka yesterday at Sharks practice.
Sure. I didn't see those lines, but I knew that he was possibly going to be on the second pair. But the point is, like, this is a bigger game for a guy like Cole Perfetti, because let's be honest. I mean, this is the year that Andrew Kopp has been given that kind of second line role that he has kind of coveted for so long, right? Like, there's no cryptic, thing happening here. Like, this is him getting his opportunity on the second line. And, you know, Perfetti, I'm really going to be curious to see how he does there on the third line, because as Dave knows, Perfetti's a shooter. Like, he's a guy that wants to score goals. Obviously, Stastny is a guy that can set up goals, and Stastny and Lowry have that defensive responsibility, as does Perfetti. But obviously, Perfetti's in his first couple of NHL games, so you want to make sure that he's got some, you know, defensively responsible players. So again, I'm not saying that, you know, this line is going to score six goals tonight. I'm just saying I don't think we saw that line in the preseason, Dave, if I'm mistaken. But so it is going to be very interesting to see how this line does.
I'm not expecting to see, I mean, Paul Maurice, we know what he is as a head coach, and he certainly is not one who frequently flips lines around and makes big line changes or anything, without sort of having his hand forced or being, he's not going to make dramatic changes after one game. You know, I think that tonight's game, at least what I'm hoping for from a viewer's perspective, is that you're going to see a game played more at 5-on-5. Because I think, as we talked about on the Wednesday post-game show, everything was so disjointed in the game on Wednesday because of the number of power plays and special teams opportunities, especially early in the game, that I don't think there was able to really get into that flow. And I think that hurt the Jets, particularly in their transition game. Because, you know, one of the areas the Jets have improved in this year is thought to be their transition out of their own zone, that first pass or skating the puck up. And just by the nature of the game, with all those power play opportunities, you never really got to see the speed of the Jets moving through the neutral zone play a factor in the game. And I think that was probably not to the advantage of the Ducks, because they were obviously shorthanded, so that would be a bridge too far. But I think that impacted the Jets and their play at 5-on-5. I mean, I go back to Wednesday and look at the high danger chances at 5-on-5, and the Jets really didn't have. I mean, I think they ended up with two or three in the course of the game. If I look back, I know they didn't have any in that first period. And I think that's why you want to see more of a flow to tonight's game. And I think that would benefit the Jets. That would benefit Paul Maurice and the players, as they'd be able to get a rotation going of their lines, because they just weren't able to get sort of into the flow of the game, really at all, because of how it played out.
Yeah, and I would think that that's one of the key factors that they discussed yesterday in practice, was the idea of limiting penalties, especially some of these like really marginal ones. Because as we know, when every season starts, the NHL says we're going to crack down on this, and the games are called a lot tighter than they will be later in the season and into the playoffs. I mean, you can always hope that they'll be consistent, but we haven't been. Well, it'll be a surprise if that's the case, as opposed to an expectation, because so you have to adjust. And, we saw, everybody remembers a few years ago when the Jets brought in, which former referee was it?
I don't remember.
One of the former refs. I don't remember who it was, but they brought him into, was it Paul Stewart maybe?
Maybe. It sounds
like it was Paul Stewart maybe. But anyways, they brought one of the refs, NHL refs in to, work with them in training camp to be less likely to take penalties. Okay, well, that's a good thing. that's one of the important things. Not to, because you can't have a good penalty goal with this team, because they've got decent units. But it's just, to your point, Drew, it's just you don't need to be killing the flow of the game, which is what we felt after that in the postgame show, was just like, it just either like you said, both ways. It really just, the idea was you just couldn't really get the game going. So
it might have been Paul Dvorsky, according to Andy Clausen there. Thank you, Andy, for that.
Andy misspelled it, though. It's with an I.
Yes, I know, but that's a good effort nonetheless. He did more than he did there.
Yeah, I was going to say, he did have it accurate, as opposed to us who were crediting.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking to a journalism grad who's, you know, familiar with editing, so, you know, I got to correct it if I see a mistake.
Yeah, he does edit all my stuff on illegalcurve.com. He's the shadow editor, so shout out to Ezzy.
And it's not the least bit annoying to you at all, Dave.
What? What?
I said it's not the least bit annoying when he does it to you.
Well, it's actually the only time it ever irritates me is if he, like, for some reason, he'll stay in the post a little longer than I want him to. And if I have to update something, I'll be like, Ezzy, I need you to get out. So then we have some fun, because then if I want, I can boot him out of it. And it says, you are now taking over for Ezra.
When am I going to get some bylines, Dave?
Well,
whenever you write something.
Fair enough. Anytime. Actually, pretty much any day you want. So anyways, I think just getting back to the idea of penalties, that's an area they're going to have to keep clean. And we saw it, you know, Brendan Dillon was getting called for penalties and Blake Wheeler got called. And I just think, like, you just can't be taking, you just can't be taking silly
penalties. Yourself, Matthew.
But I think that's why we bring in John Ginsburg, AKA the retired former math professor. So that's it. If you can clean up that element of your game and continue to work on your 5-on-5. I mean, the Jets should, what you guys have just illustrated is they should be able to dominate a San Jose Sharks team that is just in shambles. Like, the Ducks are an inexperienced team with a lot of young talent. And we've been talking about that, you know, the Ducks being a team that's rebuilding, they've got some veterans, but they're really a rebuilding young team. We don't know what the Sharks are, because they've got kind of that mix of like old and young, but
you've got the mix of the old and the young a little bit in Anaheim. I agree, Dave, more so in San Jose, but it's those bad contracts. Like, yeah, how bad is the Mark-Edward Vlasic contract? Like, we haven't even talked about Evander Kane. I think regardless if he gets suspended, I don't think that contract is being voided. So that's looking like a bad contract. You've got, you know, I mean, let's not even get into, you know, Erik Karlsson. That contract's not good either, but we got Scotty B. So let's welcome Scotty in here.
I'm just sitting backstage, and then all of a sudden, boom! Here I am.
So, well, you know, we don't keep a guest of your stature waiting or anything.
Keeping me on my toes. Yeah.
No. Yeah, we got to keep you. You know, got to make sure.
I mean, Drew could have given you a little heads up, Scott. He could have said, "We'll bring you in 2 minutes." That would have been the appropriate thing as the host to do. But heaven forbid.
It's all good.
I like to keep Scotty guessing. You know, he never knows where we're going to come from—the left or we're going to come from the right. It's, you know, right. Scotty Bill has got to be ready when we're calling upon him. Good morning, Scott.
How are you? Good. How are you guys?
We're doing very well. Good. We're obviously talking about the Jets ahead of tonight's Jets and San Jose Sharks game, game which will get underway in about a little under 12 hours, and a little bit more than 14 hours from now will, of course, be the Illegal Curve post-game show. So join us back here later tonight to talk about the Jets and the Sharks. You know, Scotty, we were saying that, from my perspective, the game against the Ducks on Wednesday was almost disjointed from the start because of all the power plays the Jets had. Now, you know, if that happens tonight, I think the power play will look a lot different and be a lot more effective, with Scheifele, you know, being set up for one-timers as opposed to Wheeler being set up for one-timers. But I think from the Jets' perspective, as much as you enjoy power plays because they are beneficial, I think, you know, they probably want to be able to get into the flow of the game a little bit more and a little bit quicker than they were able to on Wednesday against the Ducks.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you look at that Wednesday's game, and I think discombobulated was a word that Kyle Connor used after the game to kind of describe it after a while there. And that's kind of what it looked like the first game of the season. So you don't want to draw a lot of conclusions. It was a weird one without Scheifele, but you know, I always thought there were some trends too. And I kind of wrote about this because, you know, part of what the Jets this year, there's a lot of hype going into the year, obviously, of defensemen, all that kind of stuff, but there's still some lingering problems we saw in the penalty kill. You know, we still saw some of the, maybe some of those defensive breakdowns, but not as many. And then obviously I think we saw some of the improvements in that game too. If you think about the power play, I mean, that thing was snapping around pretty good on that first one, and Blake Wheeler doesn't have a one-timer. I think that's kind of, you know, part of the issue there. And if anybody watched training camp, you would have seen Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler's spot just ripping them past, you know, usually Eric Comrie, because that's who was taking the brunt of a lot of that. But Scheifele looked good on those, and I think that was they were missing that, right? I mean, that was their trigger man, and they had Kyle Connor on the other side, but they're just, you know, they weren't getting it to him quick enough for him to be, you know, effective. And Kyle Connor doesn't need a lot of time, doesn't need a lot of space, and he can tuck that one pretty cleanly into the top corner, short side. But yeah, he just wasn't getting it. I the more I think about the game, I'm like, it's almost like the first game of preseason or whatever. It's one of those games where it takes a while to kind of get into. And it's interesting because the Jets will be facing a Sharks team that hasn't played in a week. I mean, their first game of the season's tonight. Their last preseason game was last Saturday. That's a weird scenario for the Sharks too. And the Sharks aren't, you know, tabled to be a good team this year either, right? I mean, who knows? I mean, the Pacific Division is a weird division, so maybe they are half decent. But the Jets, I would expect, you know, a very motivated Mark Scheifele. If you listened to him yesterday, he seems like he's ready. I think this is a guy who wants to put game one of the second round behind him, and this will be his first chance to finally do that, just on the ice and play again in a meaningful hockey game. I think that's just going to be that'll be a big deal tonight. And yeah, I think the Sharks are going to probably go a little bit through what the Jets did last week, or on Wednesday, I guess, and just trying to find their game. And I think the Jets are going to have, you know, a better sense of what their game will look like, when they hit the ice tonight.
Scotty, you wrote about this in the Winnipeg Sun, and I agree with you 100%. Obviously, you know, it's a big game tonight for Cole Perfetti, who's trying to stick with the Jets. I mean, people, I would include myself in that group. I think there's a good chance he will be reassigned to the Moose at some point. We don't really know if that's going to be after the road trip or when it's going to be, but I think there's a good chance that he will play some games with the Moose. Again, we don't know how many games that's going to be. So on that third line with Lowry and Stastny, I mean, that's going to be definitely a line to watch. But the point I thought you made that I really agreed with was in regards to Blake Wheeler. Like, is this almost as big of a game for Wheeler in the sense that you know that Ehlers could eventually move up to that top line, and then you always do have the option because of Perfetti's skill set to go to this, you know, move up to the second line. And then I don't know, you know, if that means Blake Wheeler's on the third line, because that's just weird to say that to have a guy that's making, you know, over $8 million a year on your third line. But for you, is this kind of, are you going to be watching to see how Wheeler reacts to his performance in game one just as much as you're going to be watching Perfetti on that third line?
Yeah, that's a weird one too. And I mean, historically speaking, I don't think that they're going to be that quick to move Blake Wheeler off that line. That being said, I don't know when Pomerantz pulls the trigger on that. I mean, at some point you have to, right? Like, I mean, give Blake Wheeler credit. I mean, he's an older guy, and some of those older guys take a little longer to get into a season. He wasn't playing with Scheifele, which is, you know, has been kind of his bread and butter over, you know, especially his best seasons in the NHL, a couple years ago when he was putting up 90 points back-to-back in 2 years. So I think that'll help Blake tonight. The fact that they're going back with Perfetti on the third line, Svechnikov's coming out, it seems, based on practice lines yesterday in San Jose, I don't know. I mean, I think Cole Perfetti played a solid game. I don't want to call it spectacular. It's not like he scored. It's not like he had, you know, 3 or 4 points in his NHL opening, but he didn't do anything wrong. Like, I mean, I think that's what, you know, on that line, right. And on that line, that's the line you don't want to do anything wrong on. You are on quote unquote a checking line. But that line is also expected to put up some points too, and I think they will. With Stastny there, I don't know. Like, I'm just not sure it's where Perfetti needs to be to succeed. Mm-hmm. He's a bit more of a skilled player playing on a line with, well, if it's back to Stastny, Lowry, and him, you know, a little different type of playing style, those guys. I mean, I'm not sure who kind of fits on that line just yet, whether it's Veselainen, Svechnikov, whoever it might be. I think, you know, at some point, if Perfetti has a good game tonight and Wheeler has not a good game, I don't know what you look like in Minnesota. Do you try it? Like, I mean, what point does Paul Maurice, and I'll go back to it, what point does he have to try or to entertain the idea that Blake Wheeler may have to be an $8 million third line player. But and maybe that's better for him. I mean, if you look at the Washington Capitals, and this wasn't, it's a different situation because, you know, Alex Ovechkin, it's not like he moved down, but he moved down in terms of minutes in the year that they won the cup. And it was kind of beneficial for Ovi. And now I know we're talking about completely different players here, but you can't be running Blake Wheeler both, 20, both right 22 wingers, minutes. Yeah, well, point is, like, you know, like you can't you can't have these guys, you know, a guy in his advanced age, you know, he's the same age as I am. I hate when I say these are old guys, you know, because we're the same age. But in NHL years,
right?
You know, he is, you know, approaching kind of the, you know, the prehistoric age. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's a weird thing, and I was sort of surprised to see Perfetti still in the lineup, only because Paul Maurice has talked, he's poured so much cold water on Perfetti, and man, perhaps that's just, you know, a little bit of misdirection by the coach to make, you know, try not to hype it up too much, right? You don't want Perfetti to have more pressure on his shoulders than he needs to. But, you know, I also think that Perfetti played well enough that, you know, he didn't, you know, he is the better option to, you know, the Veselainen or the Svechnikov or even the Harkins on that line. And that's just, it's not because of, you know, merit in terms of, you know, when it comes to seniority or anything like that. It's just he's the superior player. So, yeah, and that's the thing. Like, do you move Ehlers up and give him that shot with Scheifele? Move Wheeler, but where do you move Wheeler? Like, I don't think Wheeler works on the second line either. I think you have to move him right down to the third, and then you got to find somebody to move up to that second line. I think Perfetti is probably that guy. Now, I just don't know if they're going to carry him the whole year, and that's the thing. Do they want to do that? But, you know, Paul Maurice has said, you know, it's about the Winnipeg Jets first, and if Perfetti's doing enough, you know, to help them win, well, I mean, I guess all bets are off at that point. I think, you know, we're seeing this, and we've seen it for a long time, this kind of youth revolution in the NHL. The Jets don't do that necessarily, and Paul Maurice will say, oh, well, we were the youngest team for a couple of years, and they went back to Ehlers and they had Line A, and they're running those guys. But they have this skilled guy in Perfetti who's kind of in this weird scenario where he's way too good for junior, doesn't have to play junior, showed that he was very good in the AHL. You know, now where does he kind of fit in? Does he still need another full season in the AHL? Is he ready now to play, you know, 10 to 12 minutes on a third line each night? I mean, I don't know. I mean, Paul Maurice had him on the power play, you know, when Dubois, and that might, you know, it's even hard. It'll be harder for him now to get onto the power play because you don't have Scheifele and Dubois was in the box. And that was weird. But, you know, it showed that there was some trust there, you know, and I think that's the biggest thing is Perfetti's earning the trust of Maurice. And I don't know what that means for Paul Maurice in his head in terms of, you know, how much you play this guy, but I mean, I think he's put that he's planted that seed and he's been watering it, you know, rather well and using some good fertilizer and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, no, like I just it's a weird situation. And I'm going to be interested to see how Paul Maurice plays it because he doesn't have to play Perfetti. And so that's kind of where, you know, in other years, right, like when the Jets weren't as quote unquote deep. As they were, as they seem to be this year, I mean, you don't have to play Perfetti this year. I mean, Maurice can always use, well, okay, we got to send him back. We want him to play in the AHL. That's the line that they've been using all throughout preseason. But if he keeps playing, that kind of changes, you know, what Paul Maurice is used to in terms of an extremely young guy that wasn't drafted to, you know, second overall like a Line A. here's a guy who was drafted a little bit further up in the first round, but not much. That's kind of knocking on the door and not giving Paul Maurice really an option. So I think it's interesting to kind of see how this works out for Maurice, how he kind of plays this one, because I think it'll be telling in a sense of, you know, has his philosophy kind of changed a little bit on younger players. And especially guys who he could easily send down to the AHL, but hasn't yet.
Scotty Billick is our guest Saturday morning. You're watching the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on our YouTube channel. We're live on all of our social media platforms talking about the Winnipeg Jets, the Jets and the Sharks later on tonight. Shortly after 9 o'clock will be puck drop. And then, of course, the Illegal Curve post-game show after the game, probably around 11:30, 11:45 tonight. We welcome you to join us right back here on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms.
You know, Scott, one of the biggest things we talk about is not jumping to conclusions too quickly. I mean, right. You know, yep. It's easy to do, but there's been one game of 82. So, yeah. You know, you always try and, have a little bit of ability to be patient. But, you know, it's not easy being patient in an instant gratification society. So how long, in terms of that idea of patience, do you think that the experiment of Andrew Kopp on the second line lasts for the Winnipeg Jets?
I think the leash is long there. I mean, I'm just not sure that Stastny keeps up with that line anymore. I'm not sure. It's interesting, right? I mean, who goes there if not Andrew Kopp? And I guess the easy answer is Paul Stastny. I guess that's the easy one, but is that the right one? I think they want Kopp on that line. You know, he's the dependable defensive player on that line for sure. I'm not saying that either of them, and I think Ehlers' defensive game is very underrated in terms of, you know, historically speaking, I suppose people just don't see Nikolaj Ehlers as a great defensive player, but, mm-hmm. You know, I think he sort of is pretty good. I don't know, like, here's the thing with Andrew Kopp, you know, you have to produce on that line. I mean, that's always the thing with playing in the top six. You have to produce. Last year, Andrew Kopp produced at different, you know, areas, mm-hmm. because of just the way the season went, injuries played out, that sort of thing. Andrew Kopp started the year. I believe it was the second line at center there, and so, you know, I think it's long. I mean, they went the whole training camp with that line. That line mm-hmm. was not touched in training camp, nor was really the top line. It was a lot of the third and the fourth line, but Maurice was really letting that line. I think part of that had to do with Pierre-Luc Dubois and just trying to get him some consistency. I didn't think the line looked horrible. I mean, it's just with Andrew Kopp, it's so weird because, you know, he wants to be a second line player. They're giving him the opportunity. It's only been one game, but he's coming off a career year, so I think you're gonna kind of have to see how it goes. I question his finishing ability around the net. I think that's where a lot of the that's the doubters, you know, will point to. I mean, this is a guy who just doesn't seem to have the hands of a second line player like Ehlers, suppose, will use. But I think there's also a question mark there that Pierre-Luc Dubois has to, you know, play mm-hmm. a certain game too, right? And, you know, it can't just be Ehlers who is the driver of that line. Let's call it what it is. But I think, you know, they all have to be. I think Kopp has to, I think he's just going to learn how to be a second line player. I mean, that's kind of the thing. He's primarily been a third line guy with this team forever. This is his first chance. Give him a shot. And I think Maurice will, because I think that he knows that line at least is going to be dependable defensively. And eventually, you know, Ehlers is going to score 5-on-5. And I thought he had some chances in the other game in the first game too. So, yeah, I don't know. Again, like you said, it's hard to draw. Well, you don't want to draw conclusions. It's easy to draw them. You don't want to. I mean, that's kind of the thing. You want to blow it all up. But I just don't know what the better option is there. You know, do you go with Stastny? I just don't know if that's the option. Maybe you try Harkins, but I don't think Harkins is any different than Kopp in terms of his sort of finishing ability. I mean, they both kind of score the same sort of goals. And, mm-hmm. you know, I'm just looking at the chat here, and one guy says that Kopp's not a playmaker. And I don't think he, like, I don't think necessarily that's the case, but I'm not sure if he's a goal scorer in the way that you would want to be. I mean, I think he can set up plays just fine. I'm just not sure he is the guy that's going to be scoring all the goals. So if that's fine, if you're feeding Kopp or feeding Dubois and Ehlers, mm-hmm. it's not so fine if you're not producing at all. And I think that's probably the barometer for where Kopp needs to be. I mean, he has to be producing in some form. you know, so if that line goes out and puts up 8 points tonight combined, well, you know, we're not talking about this. You guys aren't talking about this in the post game, or you are, but in a different light, of course.
Right.
Yeah. So
we talk about a lot of things, Scotty.
I get it. I mean, it's got to fill some time sometimes. And, you know, after one game, it's tough. And especially with 2 days, I mean, we've dissected this first game a lot.
Yeah.
Already. And, you know, I'm just not sure how much stock we put into it. You know, I think I hate saying that because it's like, okay, but the Jets are one injury away from looking like they did the other night. And we know what they look like without Mark Scheifele and how difficult it seems for them to score without him. But you know, I want to see what the team looks like tonight, because this is kind of their quote unquote best team, their best offering. And so let's see what it looks like. And yeah, I'll be interested to see what Kopp does, what Dubois does, and Ehlers does, because I think that line wants to have a better game. But I think they all do. I think they all saw 34 shots and be like, yeah, you know, we put up some shots, but not a lot of dangerous ones. You know, mm-hmm. there wasn't a lot of traffic. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's kind of where Anaheim was able to kind of figure it out. It was all traffic tips.
That's right.
You know, that's kind of stuff. I mean, two of them came on the power play. You know, I think the Jets will be fine if they're putting up 34 shots tonight. And I mean, I guess that's where I'm at with that. I'm curious, and maybe you guys are going to ask me this, but I'm more curious to see, you know, if Connor Hellebuck's only seeing 20 plus shots tonight and not 30 plus. I mean, that's kind of it, right? Like, that's where I want to see. Hellebuck himself said in preseason that, you know, it's a different way to play the game, and it's not a game that he's played here that often. Mm-hmm. You know, how often have, yeah, like, you know, this is a guy
who gets fire usually.
Right. And he almost likes that. I mean, sure. There's a lot of goalies who like that. I mean, Paul Maurice pulled out the Mike Richter thing and about that. And some goalies thrive off of that. And Hellebuck, I think, likes that because it gets him into the zone. I mean, if you look at Wednesday's game, I mean, it was one shot through however many minutes, right? I mean, of course, you know, there's power play time, but the Jets were just crushing the other team. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to do that, I mean, you know, if you're going to crush the other team like that, probably got to give Hellebuck some run support, but at the same time, Hellebuck's got to be ready to make that first save and not give up that first goal on the first shot and that sort of thing.
He probably won't lead the league in goals saved above average again this year, just because of the nature of the team. And, you know, to your point, Scott, that brings me to my question about sort of what your thoughts were on the Jets defense on Wednesday night and sort of the don't choke. It's not worth choking here. We need you to stay for the whole interview. Take your time.
Mute him. We'll mute Scott so he can cough.
Let's get Scott some balls or some Vicks Vapo Rub.
I was going to say, I'm not sure what was in that drink there, but you might want to make just sure water. It's just water. Okay, good. Just want to make sure.
Talking about Scotty's flute?
It's a big flute. I'm not going to talk about my flute. Oh, boy. Anyways.
Keep it clean. It's Saturday morning. We're going to get it's a family show.
Yeah, say that for the post game, Scotty. Come on. The
post game show is where we work blue.
That's IC After Dark, we call it.
That's right. I was going to say the more aggressive Jets defense, you know, where you could, there were numerous opportunities, particularly in the first period, I thought, where you saw the Jets where in the last couple of years they would have been passive and backed off. At the offensive blue line, they were more aggressive and they were pinching down the boards. And again, more reminiscent of 17-18, like we all expected. I mean, sort of your thoughts about that. And, you know, I think it was effective. Obviously it wasn't effective necessarily on the scoreboard, but I think it was effective, you know, in a lot of other ways.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I thought the defense looked good. They're not maybe spectacular, but let's think about, you know, the last two seasons, I mean, this is a team that got hemmed in often every night. It didn't matter what the team was. At some point, they were going to get hemmed in. I didn't think that was the case at all on Wednesday. I thought they played very well defensively. Guys activating, defensemen activating, maybe a little more aggressiveness at times, but there wasn't that many odd man rushes either. I mean, the Jets weren't really defending that as well. And I thought, again, you know, if you want to look at a good game, and this is where I think Jets fans were really hoping, was, is Josh Morrissey back to being Josh Morrissey? And I thought he was. You know, I thought he looked really good against with Nate Schmidt on that top pairing. They were far and away their best pairing on the night, I thought. And Josh Morrissey played well. He just looked whatever you want to call it. And you know, I haven't lost a parent, and I haven't gone through all that kind of stuff that he's gone through. But it seems like there's a bit of a, just some, the less of a burden on his shoulders, and he's playing. So yeah, comfortable is the right word. And you know, he looked like he was ready to go. And yeah, there was a little bit of garbage in front of the net. I agree with the chat. But at the same time, I'm not entirely sure that there was all these rebound chances. I mean, Hellebuck led the league in rebound chances for against. I mean, that's kind of on, you know, who do you blame that on? Is it on the goalie for not catching the puck? And we saw a little bit from Hellebuck. He was kind of fighting it early on in that game. Or do you, you know, blame the defense for when he makes the initial save, nobody's there to clear. But I didn't, you know, as much as there was some trash in front of the net that needed to be cleared, I think there's just less of it. I don't know. I mean, I want to, again, I need to see it again. Want to see it again in another team. And you want to see it against better teams. But I think the defensive structure looked better. They looked better up the ice. The transitions looked better. The zone exit, it looked better. There wasn't that hemmed in moments for, you know, a full shift or two shifts at a time. So I don't know how that changes a team on the ice. How does that change a forward group on the ice? How does that change the mentality of a goaltender that's, you know, for the most part has been under siege for the last two seasons, right? I mean, I don't know how big of a shift in mentality that is for players to kind of move back. Oh, we don't need to go back as far, you know, whatever that is. So, but I thought, you know, the team was pretty good defensively. I mean, if you look at their possession metrics, the Jets were very, very good on Wednesday night, despite the loss. So, you know, let's see what happens tonight. I think, you know, the defense was one of the promising things that you saw out of that loss. I mean, what you didn't want to see in that game was the same sort of things, getting caved in, all that stuff. And you didn't see that. I mean, that's what you have to go by. You know, again, one game, of course, but I mean, that's sort of the things that you have to, if you want to take the bad, and there was some bad in that game, penalty kill, obviously, that sort of thing, let's take that. But you also have to take some of the good, and that's kind of what I wrote. It was like, you know, what trends were bucked,
and you take the good, you take the bad, it's the facts of life,
right? Yeah, but I mean, that's the thing. Like, I mean, you can't just look at, you know, some of the trends that were bad in the last couple of seasons were still there potentially, but there were some things that weren't the same as the last couple of years too, and I thought the defensive game was one of them.
No, Scotty, before I ask you my question, you mentioned the Jets being under siege the last couple of years. So shout out to Steven Seagal if he happens to catch this show on YouTube. And second of all, this has been bothering me for about 15 minutes based on my last question. Alex Ovechkin's not a right winger. He's a left winger. He shoots right. And
that's true.
A couple of minutes after I said that, I was like, how do I not remember what wing the greatest, second greatest at this point, goal scorer of all time?
I can tell you why you don't remember that. It's because you have two children.
I have two children, and also probably I think I might have been, you know, ingesting fertilizer before the show. I have no idea, but you know, Scotty, I want to ask you about Evander Kane. We haven't even really talked about him that much, you know, with you or, you know, before you jumped on with us. I mean, obviously there's some ongoing investigations going on, but it's tough to say, you know, whether, you know, Kane is going to be suspended. It looks like there's a good chance he will be, but what do you think the chances are that he's going to play significant games in the NHL this year? Because right now it looks like his life off the ice is a complete mess.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even know what to say about Evander Kane. It's, you know, good that he wasn't caught betting on the game, you know, I suppose. I mean,
that's the best thing you can say about his offseason.
Well, I mean, that's because of the rest of the stuff. I mean, the allegations from his wife about all that stuff, that is, you know, those are bad. And then there's, you know, the latest thing there with him too. And so it's just, it's almost like it's just a never ending tire fire with him. And you know, even if he does come back this season, where is he coming back? Like, do the Sharks want him in the room? I don't think so.
They did. At the end of last season, Kevin Kurz of the Athletic was saying that the team, the players basically said, we don't want him back.
Well, and that, isn't that sort of what happened in Winnipeg? I mean, you know, let's be honest here. I mean, you know, you don't get your tracksuit thrown into the shower, you know, just because whatever, and you don't take it the way that Kane took it just because it wasn't, you know, this little joke from Bufflin or whatever, right? Like, I mean, I think that's sort of, you know, how it's going in San Jose too. It's just not really working, and it didn't work in Buffalo either. And And I don't know. He's a bit of a polarizing guy, of course. That comes with a lot of, you know, quote unquote drama. And I don't really know what to say. I mean, it's, you know, you want to see these things play out. They're all allegations until they're proven, you know, somewhere. You know, the betting stuff, I mean, you really hope that, you know, he gets whatever help he needs for that, of course, because it's obviously been an issue in his life, and who knows what it's kind of leading to. So hopefully that is, but I mean, I just, as a hockey player, yeah, I don't know, man. I mean, you know, I guess the Sharks have to sort of like, what do they do? I mean, do they terminate his contract? What do they base it on? I guess right now, I mean, you know, part of it is you have to kind of make sure, like, some of these allegations would have to be true for them to, you know, kind of, I guess, terminate it. So I don't really know how that works legally. But I think you got to search for a trade then. And what are you getting for Evander Kane in the trade market? I mean, first of all, his contract isn't, you know, what another team would want to take on, I don't think, given the, you know, the risk profile that you're also.
The Sharks might have to retain salary, right?
Well, maybe, you know, I don't know, right?
It's a non-starter. I mean, I think so, right?
Exactly. And so, like, I mean, is there a coach in the NHL that thinks that they can kind of, I don't know, get him back into line? I don't know. I mean, I have no idea. But yeah, like, I think it's, I don't know. It's a touchy subject because I just don't think we know half of it, right? I mean, We kind of know exactly what's been reported.
What's true and what's not true, right?
Yeah, like, but I don't want to diminish anything that his wife has alleged, because I think more often than not, these things, that's what the problem is. They get diminished, and people don't think, you know, Evander Kane, yeah, he might be whatever, but he's not capable of that. I'm not going to say that either. You know, those things obviously have to get played out in court or wherever, that sort of thing. But yeah, I just, in terms of ice, on the ice, I don't know. I don't know where he plays. And you know, it's not like he's going to go play in the AHL. This isn't a guy. But he's got to want it, right? I mean, he's got to want to turn his career into something that's not, you know, this everlasting tire fire. And yeah, him and John Jones should be best buds. Yeah, you know, that is interesting. I don't know if your viewers don't know who John Jones is one of the top UFC fighters in the world. Pound for pound, one of the best fighters, you know, that's ever done it, and has all sorts of on, off, out of cage, I suppose, out of octagon issues, you know, when it comes to that. So, you know, yeah, maybe it is the KHL. I don't know. I don't know where he plays. And I just, but if it's not with the Sharks, yeah, like if it's not the Sharks, I don't know where he's playing, because I just don't see another team taking him on and taking that contract, no, however much it is. You know, but eventually I think he probably, you know, if he keeps going down this road, he does something where, you know, eventually a team is able to terminate his contract, because it just kind of breaches the, you know, whatever the rules are with those types of things. I'm no agent, and I'm not very good with all the contract stuff, but it, you know, he's already approaching that, and I don't know, maybe the Sharks wanted that betting on stuff to be true just so they could kind of rid themselves of him. I don't know. Right. Like, I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, there's always just something, right? There's always something with Evander, and you know, and I think that's kind of where it is. And I just don't know. Yeah, I don't know if there's a coach in the NHL that can kind of take it. Maybe it's Barry Trotz. Maybe it's but even then, like, the Islanders are so good that why would you kind of introduce that to your room and take that risk? So like, I don't know. And it depends. Like, I mean, I don't know what his no movement clause is or any of that kind of stuff in his contract is. So yeah, it's, that's a weird one. I got nothing else on that. I don't know. It's a tough
more, one. More questions than answers, because as you said, Scotty,
well, that's it, right?
A lot, you know, there's the domestic abuse, but there's also the, you know, the faking of the vaccination card. Yeah. But obviously if the domestic abuse allegations turn out to be true, then he'll never play in the NHL.
No. Yeah, exactly. And the vaccination card, I mean, come on, like, just, don't get me started on this vaccination
stuff. Yeah, that's Scott's other gig. I was going to say, Scott doesn't want to – Scott's finally on hockey. We don't want to talk about vaccines.
It's like, you know, it's the funniest thing with – and it's not funny, but, like, you know, it just seems like a comedy of errors, really. Like, you know, you, I get cleared of, you know, if I'm Evander Kane, I got cleared of betting on hockey. And then all of a sudden there's something else. And then the next week there's something else. And it's, it seems like there's been a month of different things. So
where did he even get that fake vaccination card? Like,
I want to know where everything's available on the
dark web, man. Yeah. Dark web. So anyway, yeah.
Well, I mean, Scott, it's gonna be hard to it's gonna be hard to top that one. I was simply just gonna ask about whether you were surprised that Christian Vesalainen wasn't on that third line wing and Cole Perfetti was, because even though we talked about Cole Perfetti earlier, but I was a little surprised, right? Because if it was just an audition, if it was just a place holding, I was a little surprised that Paul Maurice kind of jumbled his lines as much as he did in that first game and put Perfetti into that third line role and kind of had Vesalainen, you know, not where you expected him, because that's where we'd seen him pretty much all preseason. So were you a little surprised by that?
I just never thought that Vesalainen won the third line job. I mean, so yeah, I mean, maybe a little surprised, but not really, I guess. I mean, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I don't think he was. I just don't think he won the job. I mean, you know, if you watch the preseason, they gave him chance after chance, and Paul Maurice said, I mean, when I asked him about, you know, where is that third line window? Does Svechnikov, can he move in there? What about Perfetti? He basically said to me that the window was open. And so, you know, that to me means that nobody's won the job, and nobody did. I mean, it, you know, Vesalainen didn't win the job. He didn't take full advantage of it. And you know, whatever that is. I mean, I think Vesalainen plays a very solid defensive game. I just don't think he shoots the puck when he needs to. And I think when you saw Yevgeny Svechnikov on the first and second days of training camp, you saw a guy that was placed, and he was already shooting the puck. You know, it didn't matter where, he was finding a spot to get into to get a shot off. And I think that's where, you know, if the window was a little ajar, that's where the wedge kind of went in and it started opening more and more. And then Perfetti came along, and it wasn't like the Perfetti wasn't in the picture. I just don't think they expected him. I don't think it was expected that Perfetti would be still here. I mean, obviously I think they needed him for the cap purposes to get through, but I thought, you know, he would be one of the ones to go down, and now he's playing on the third line and for a second game in a row when they don't really have to do that. And I think they wouldn't be doing that if Vesalainen would have won the job. And I just don't think he did. He didn't show enough on that line to do it. And, you know, Dave, you watch the AHL more than I do, obviously. You know, you spend a lot of time at the rink watching Vesalainen and all the games. And, you know, I think from what you've said and others have said, he's played well in the AHL. I just don't know if it's translated, you know, into this NHL game. And again, you obviously would have watched Perfetti a lot last year too. And, you know, he was very solid in the AHL as well. And I just think that Perfetti's, you know, ahead of Vesalainen, even though Vesalainen's had a couple years of pro now. I think that Perfetti's just played better. I mean, again, I don't know what Paul Maurice is going to do with Perfetti, but I think that Vesalainen kind of left the door open. And so when you have Harkins, Nash, and Vesalainen on the fourth line, that's probably where Vesalainen, you know, deserves to be at this point, because he just, like I said, he didn't set himself apart. He didn't blow any doors off. He didn't do any of those types of things. And at the end of the day, you've got to be able to kind of play with Adam Lowry in a certain style of game. You know, defensively, it's probably there, but offensively, I'm not sure that he's just as tenacious enough as he needs to be to kind of, you know, to really kind of grind that puck, you know, down low in the offensive zone like that line likes to do. And again, he's not, you know, I think Perfetti is a guy who'll get a shot off just as much as Svechnikov would, you know, especially if it doesn't look like he'll be in the lineup tonight. You know, I think they have that option. And I think if Perfetti went down, I'm not even sure that they put Vesalainen in there either. I think Svechnikov could go right into the third line and be that guy. So again, I think it's just a testament to, you know, the kind of training camp that Vesalainen had. And while it was fine, it just wasn't, you know, mind-blowing enough for him to earn that spot on the third line. So,
yeah. Scotty Billick covers the Winnipeg Jets for the Winnipeg Sun. He's a great friend of ours. Scott, I appreciate your insight. Thanks for joining us this morning, buddy.
Yeah, anytime, guys. Apologies for almost dying on your show, too.
All right.
Would have been a milestone for the show. Banner day.
Well, yeah, you know, Yeah, instead of the mustard video, we'll just show your death on repeat. How about that?
I forgot about that. That was a while ago. Eh? Yeah, I need some mustard this morning. I'm a little parched. So, anyways,
mix a little mustard with some Buckley, Scotty.
That's right. Yeah. All right. Good one, guys.
Thanks, Scott.
Appreciate it.
Thanks, yeah. Scott. We'll see you later, buddy. There you go. Scott Billick, our guest here on the program. Let's take our first break. When we come back, our over under for the 2021-22 season and Frank Saravelli at the bottom of the hour. Much more to come. You're listening, you're watching, you're chatting with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms. 10 minutes past the top of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you. As I mentioned, Frank Saravelli in about 20 minutes time. Post-game show, the Illegal Curve post-game show at around 11:45, maybe 11:50, give or take a couple minutes later tonight. It'll be a late night / early morning, so join us back here on our YouTube channel as we break down tonight's Jets and Sharks game. Want to give a big shout out to all of our sponsors: Linden Market Dental Center, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Boston Pizza, as well as our friends at Seagram's. They're always terrific supporters of us here at the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and we encourage you to support them because they support us.
To answer Matthew's question, by the way, Drew, I have an interesting story. One time, Drew and I were recording a commercial for Les Rikus, and I actually choked Drew with the microphone cord because he was annoying me so much.
That's true, but the number of times that Ezzy has tried to choke me with things is, way too many to count. It's just part of our charm and part of our friendship. It involves the occasional choking as well. If you've ever had the pleasure or displeasure, as the case may be, pre-CPAP to share a hotel room with Ezzy, you would try and smother him with a pillow on more than one occasion because the snoring was a problem. But fortunately, he's remedied that situation so that he could stay married and get married in the first place.
The only reason I'm married, I said this at my wedding, Drew, you were there. Dave was as well. I should mention that. But the only reason I am married is because of that CPAP machine. I think Richie might have mentioned that in his speech as well. But we've had a lot of fun recording the commercials over the years. We've actually got some more commercials coming up. We've got a few new sponsors coming up, so we'll reveal that in the next week or so. But we always have fun with our sponsors. We are lucky that they give us creative control. I'm not sure if that's a good thing for them. It's a good thing for us. But it's nice to hear some of those old commercials back in the day of the 1290 days.
We got a rotation going. I found them all so we can change up the commercials every now and then. Just a quick note before we get to the Jets over-under. The backup goaltender tonight for the Toronto Maple Leafs, Peter Mrazek, is injured. It is not Michael Hutchinson there, Mr. Ginsberg. They do not have the cap space to call up a goaltender because... say that again, Ezzy?
E-bug.
No, they do. Yes, it's an emergency. They have got Alex Bishop, a goaltender from the University of Toronto.
And signed him ATO
to an PTO? Amateur tryout tonight's game to be the backup to Jack Campbell. The reason why is Justin Hall, their defenseman, is injured. So Timothy Liljegren is into the lineup to be a defenseman, and they don't have the cap space to call up Hutchinson. And they can't yet use an emergency call-up situation because you have to play one game before you can use the emergency call-up. So tonight, the backup to Jack Campbell for the Toronto Maple Leafs is Alex Bishop of the University of Toronto. And anytime there's a random backup goaltender, you know very well something is going to happen. And I don't wish him any, I hope it's the most minor of minor things, but something is going to happen to Jack Campbell that you might see Alex Bishop, whoever he is, of the University of Toronto, playing hockey tonight for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Do you guys think that like David Ayers has already called Alex Bishop and like kind of talked him off the ledge a little bit, or maybe shout out to Scott Foster back in the day for the Chicago Blackhawks? What did he make, 10 saves or something like that? I remember the save that stands out to me is Buff came down, I think it was the right wing, and just absolutely ripped a slap shot. Foster made the save, but I almost thought that Buff was going to shoot the puck like through him. He just obviously is not an NHL goaltender. He's an e-bug. But hopefully David Ayers has contacted Alex Bishop. And I agree with you, Drew. I think 100% Bishop is going into that game and winning.
At some point in time, you'll see him tonight. Let's get to the win over-under for the 2021-22 season for the Winnipeg Jets. We like to do this at the beginning of every year. We start with Mark Scheifele. Since the start of 2016-17, Mark Scheifele has played 348 regular season games, scoring 362 points. That is an average of 1.04 points per game. In an 81-game season this year, Scheifele obviously having missed game one, Mark Scheifele will score over or under 86 points. For context, if he was to go by his career average, that would be 84.2 points. So will he be over or under 85.5 points this year?
I'm going to go over. I think it's tough to really, I mean, 80, obviously you set the number at exactly where it should be, right, based on the statistics, but I'm going to go over. I don't think, you know, Scheifele's necessarily going to take the jump up to the high 90s or 100, but I wouldn't be surprised if he's in the low 90s, so I'll go over.
So he's going to have a career year, according to Mr. Ginsburg. Dave, over or under from your perspective?
Well, Mark Scheifele wants to be on Team Canada's Olympic team, and I think that there's a lot of motivation for Mark Scheifele to put last season behind him and to put the Jets on his back. I think he wants to be that player in the NHL that's you know, seen as a top player. So I think he's in the over 90 category for sure.
There you have a career year for Mark Scheifele, according to Mr. Manouk and Mr. Ginsburg. Those of us,
as well as James Robinson and Jay Miller in the chat.
That's right. If you're in the chat, by all means, give us your predictions as well. Say over or under whatever we are talking about here. Let's go to question number two. Since the great defenseman departure in 2019, Josh Morrissey has played 121 regular season games for the Jets with an average time on ice of 23 minutes and 8 seconds. So strictly regular season. I'll say that again. This year, with the revamped Winnipeg Jets defense, Morrissey will average more or less than 22.50 time on ice per game.
I don't know. We're talking about ice time here. Like, who wrote these questions?
Drew, obviously you didn't.
You know what?
Okay, I'm muting him. Dave, you answer.
Well, I'll say under. I think a little bit under. I mean, like, we're talking about a little bit. Like, he's going to be somewhere around there. Actually, you know what? I'm going to go over.
Classic right Ginsburg.
Just sit right on that fence there, buddy.
Did you call me Ginsburg because we were talking about e-bugs, Manouk?
Oh, yeah.
Dave, I'm ignoring Ezzy now, so you can answer
the question. I switch back, Drew. I'm going to go under.
Thanks. Thank you. That's very helpful.
You know what? I think that we've seen Josh Morrissey like a new lease on life in terms of how he's playing. And, you know, with the amount of defensive help they have this year, I really do think it'll be much more by committee than the expectation that they're going to sit on him and Schmidt. So I'm going to go slightly under as well.
Okay, thank you for at least answering the
question. I'll say this much. I mean, the power play time is going to have a huge factor on that, right, Dave? Because Nate Schmidt is possibly going to factor in and maybe play, you know, the point where Morrissey right. might have. But I expect Morrissey to play on the power play as well. So I don't think it's going to change that much, Drew, put it that way. I mean, I was joking with you, but it's probably going to be somewhere around 22 to 24 minutes, right?
It's a pretty big range.
Well, no, but that's why you set the over or under at 22.50, right? Because so it's hard to really, like, I mean, if it's under, he's not going to average 18 minutes a night. We know that.
Well, that's why I didn't say it was going to be 18 minutes a night, right? That's why I didn't say it was going to be over or under 25 minutes a night. There's a logic that goes into my creating these questions.
This for the third record. Question better be better than the first two, I'll tell you that much.
Nikolaj Ehlers' career high in points is 64. In 82 over. Games played back in 2016-17. Last year in the abbreviated season, Ehlers was just under 1 point per game. This year, Nikolaj Ehlers will be over or under 78 points.
Raise the roof. If anybody follows me on Twitter, I see SEG, you should follow me. I'm pretty much the best thing on Twitter right now since sliced bread. And there is a sliced bread Twitter account, by the way. I'm going to say over. I think Ehlers could easily do 40-80 this year.
So you have him going over, and of course that would be certainly shatter a career high, but you have him close to a point per game is what you're saying.
Yeah. I think he could, I'm going to say, 80 points.
Okay. Dave, yeah. The number was 78.
Yeah, I think I'm with Ez. I think Ehlers is just going to continue to rise. We've seen it already, just how good he is. We'll see if that chemistry and what he's able to produce can translate to his line, or if he gets the bump up to the top line. If he and Scheifele are playing together, I mean, that could be no holds barred in terms of what they're able to do. But yeah, I think I see over for Nikolaj Ehlers because I see him having a career year.
I look lots of overs in the chat, except for from Mark Sports Video, who is predicting an injury, and he goes with under for Nikolaj Ehlers. Let's go on to this is a Pierre-Luc Dubois related question. In his three full seasons in Columbus, Pierre-Luc Dubois scored 48, 61, and 49 points. This year for the Winnipeg Jets, Pierre-Luc Dubois will score over or under 55.5 points.
I'm going to go under. I think it's going to be slightly under that. I kind of, you know, when I was kind of projecting, you know, some of the I was in a hockey pool recently and I actually did take Dubois. So it's funny you asked that question, Drew. I kind of had him penciled in for maybe 50 points. Maybe he gets into the high 50s. So I'm going to say under, but not that much under. Like that's where I kind of have him exactly around 50 to 55. So.
David?
Yeah, I'm. See, it's hard because if he's playing with Ehlers and they get hot and they've developed something, then I suspect he'll be picking up a lot of apples on Ehlers, goals and probably vice versa. So I'm going to go, I think if Ehlers and him can develop chemistry, and there's a lot of if there, I think that, you know, and we know, look, he's in a contract year and he needs to have a bounce back year. So there's a lot of pressure on him because if he doesn't have a good year, it's one thing to throw it off last year. It's another thing to have a second consecutive year. So I'm gonna say that Pierre-Luc Dubois throws the shackles off of what he was able to do last year. I'm gonna go over. I'm gonna project him into that 58 to 61 point range.
There you go.
58 to 61. A little precise there.
I'm going. I like it. Well, because I know Drew's gonna hold my feet to the fire. Or if he won't, I'll come back and be like, aha.
Well, the video will be is there for perpetuity, so we can always go back and look and see how the predictions went. Let's move on to Andrew Kopp. Since becoming a regular on the Winnipeg Jets in 2015-16, Andrew Kopp's shooting percentage has been an average of 11.46%. The last two seasons, Kopp set career high in shots with 121 and 115. This year, Andrew Kopp will have a shooting percentage over or under 12.95%.
I have to get my abacus for this one.
I'm going to go a little bit under just because I do think he's going to shoot the puck more just being on the second line. But I mean, that one is very tough to really project. I don't really follow the shooting percentages that much, Drew. But I mean, there is every reason to believe that Kopp's going to continue, you know, what he did last year with his career numbers, right? So he does shoot the puck a lot, as you mentioned, the last couple of years, more than the previous years. So I think because of that, his shooting percentage is going to be a little bit lower. I have no idea how much lower, but I'm going to go under.
Yeah, I'm going under on that one. I think that there's going to be a lot more pressure on Andrew Kopp this year, and we're going to see how he's able to, you know, handle it. He's bet on himself. And that's, you know, that's good for him. I mean, it's good to have that sort of level of confidence in your game, but I'm not quite there with him yet. So I'm going to go under on that percentage, Drew.
Adam Lowry has scored more than 12 goals once in his career in 2016-17 when he had 15. He was on pace to match that or marginally best that last season. This year, Adam Lowry will score over or under 14 and a half goals.
I'll go under. I mean, I could easily see him, you know, in that kind of 15 to 20 range, but I kind of see him more in the kind of 12 to 15 range. So I'm going to go under, but I don't think it's going to be much under. That's right around where he should be. So again, I don't feel confident in saying under, but I don't know how close to 20 he'll get. Like, I think if he's over, it'll probably be kind of, like I said, 15 to 18 goals.
Well, Dave, we have a disagreement in the chat. We have James Robinson who says Lowry will score 9 goals, a nice precise number. And then Kenny's water bottle, happy birthday, Ken Weeb, by the way. Lowry will score 16 goals. So obviously we got one under and one over in the chat. David, 14 and a half was the number.
I just want to do a quick aside. I do enjoy whenever I see Kenny's water bottle's image that, you know, because originally he was just Kenny's water bottle without an image of Kenny Weeb. And I said, you have to have an image of Kenny Weeb in order to drinking water. Otherwise, it's just not, it doesn't have the same pizzazz. So I like that switch from Kenny's water bottle.
Sure, I'm pretty sure that Kenny's water bottle is Dave's burner account.
Dave has a lot. I'm pretty sure most of the people in the chat are Dave's burner accounts.
I do have a few. Only the ones who agree with me. I'm going over. I think that Adam Lowry is, I think we saw him kind of reborn last year a little bit. And I think he's going to look, you know, we were talking about it earlier. I know that we call the third line a checking line, but you can't have checking lines in the NHL in the top nine. You need to, that's an outdated way of thinking. You really need three lines that can produce. And if you don't have three lines producing, because you already know your fourth line, especially with the Jets, doesn't look like it's going to be producing. See, James Robinson confirming. James, you're not supposed to be confirming. But if James is confirming, doesn't that mean I'm confirming?
It's true.
We're in an interesting pattern.
You're at the nexus of the universe when it comes seriously. To burner accounts.
I actually once went to the nexus of the universe when Waverly and Keniston intersected, and I said, how is this possible? How is it possible that Waverly and Keniston can intersect? Anyways, that's an aside.
It's Bridgewater.
It's called the end of the city. But anyways, I think Lowry's going to be over.
Paul Stastny has not scored more than 18 goals since 2013-14 when he had 25 with the Colorado Avalanche. This year, Stastny will score over or under 16.5 goals.
Say over. I think he's going to score 20 this year.
That would be a higher number than he's used to. But David, as he's saying over.
I'm going under.
With an explanation?
No, I don't really feel like giving an explanation. We're a little pressed for time, so I don't want to.
We got Frank Saravalli coming up.
We got Frank coming up, so I don't want to, you know.
We got lots of time. Time is not a factor. Okay, I'll do this last one.
Time is a construct, Drew. You know that.
I know. We'll do this last one, and then we'll take a break and bring Frank in after that, and maybe we'll wrap up the show with the last few ones. Since he joined the Vegas Golden Knights in 2017-18, Nate Schmidt was a consistent 30-point defenseman, garnering 36, 30, and 31 points in his 3 years in Vegas. The less said about last season in Vancouver, the better. This year, Schmidt will score over or under 31.5 points for the Winnipeg Jets.
Over. I think, you know, when you consider that he's going to get looks on the power play, we know the Jets most likely are going to be just as good as they were, if not better. I do think they could easily get into the top five in the NHL in the power play, so he's going to factor in there, but he's obviously going to factor in big time even strength on the top pair with Morrissey, so I could see him easily being around that kind of 35 to 40 point range.
Yeah, you really see a kind of a reborn Nate Schmidt, I think, here with Winnipeg, and I think I'm inclined to go with Ezzie. I think, you know, with power play opportunities and just a kind of an offense that's kind of back to thinking offense with the way the top line, second line, that sort of idea is changing their way of thinking a little bit now, not being as defensively minded as they had been last year when they were trying to make up for their limitations. I suspect Schmidt will be over.
Okay, one more. I lied. Last season, the Jets defensemen combined to score a grand total of 10 goals. This year, the Jets defense will score over or under 15.5 goals.
That's a pretty easy one, guys. I think we're all going to go over here. I think everyone in the chat that's, you know, I love that, you know, a lot of people are doing it, you know, as we do it here. We definitely were not able to do that on the radio back in the day, guys. I'm going to say over. I could see it, you know, being somewhere, you know, over 20 for sure.
Mm-hmm. I'm with Ez. Yeah, I think that there's no question, but to the reasons I just outlined in the Schmidt answer, I think that there's no question that this Jets defense is going to be much more inclined to score and shoot and result in goals. Sorry, and so I think you're going to see over for that step.
All righty, there you have the over under. Got a couple more that we can do later on in the program before we wrap up on this Saturday morning. Let's take our second break. When we come back, Frank Saravalli from Daily Faceoff is going to join us. He's going to tell us why he thinks, as part of his bold predictions this season, the Winnipeg Jets will hoist Lord Stanley's Cup at season's end. Frank Saravalli up next. You're listening, you're watching, you're chatting. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms. Bottom of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you on this Saturday morning, imminently awaiting the arrival of our good friend Frank Saravalli, hockey insider, president of hockey content for Daily Faceoff. Gentlemen, the Jets and the Sharks later on tonight in about, let me do some quick math, you go 12 hours, that'll be 10:30, a little bit less than that, that'll be 10 and a half hours from now. Around there is when the Jets and the Sharks will do battle in San Jose. It'll be a late night for the post-game show as well. We remind everybody to join us back here later tonight to talk about the Jets and the Sharks before the Jets head to Minnesota to wrap up this opening three-game road trip. It'll be interesting. Actually, the Jets will be facing the Wild in their home opener as well come Tuesday night, as the Wild are on the West Coast right now facing the Ducks and the Kings this weekend, if I'm not mistaken. And without further ado, we welcome to the program our good friend Frank Saravelli, as I mentioned, hockey insider, president of hockey content for DFO Hockey. Frankie, good morning. How you doing, buddy?
Hey guys, good to be with you. Dave, look at that background there. The fire roasting. Isn't it a little early for that? It's October.
You know what? Winnipeg. Generally, I would say yes, Frank, but it's starting to get a little cooler here in Winnipeg. So we're.
All right, give me the temp today. What is it?
Well, you know what's funny? It's going to go up to about 15 Celsius, but.
Okay,
but
come it's on. A little That's cool way overnight. Too warm for the fireplace.
But it's not there yet. Right now, we're around 5 or 6. So we're getting there.
Well, still, a little
I'm warming bit up. I'm warming up the province here.
Just a little suspect.
Dave is a little suspect. His fire and really his entire persona is a little suspect there, Frank, and we would agree with that. Good morning. As I mentioned, you know, Frank obviously brought you on to talk about the start of the 2021-22 season. And I got to say, buddy, you know, we would have just bought you a beer. There's easier ways to get a beer bought for you in Winnipeg than having to predict the Winnipeg Jets as your 2021-22 Stanley Cup champion, which you did earlier this week in your bold predictions on dailyfaceoff.com. So take us through your thinking there, that, you know, you came out and you said you're waving the Winnipeg Jets flag this year as a bold prediction. Why do you think the Jets could ultimately be the Stanley Cup champion at season's end?
Well, first game notwithstanding, you know, I don't think enough people were talking about the Jets and how good of an offseason that they had. I just like what they've built to this point, you know, and to reiterate all the points, you guys know them already. I think one of the best top six forward groups in hockey. You've got the perennial Vezina candidate in net in Connor Hellebuck. And then now you've properly bolstered this back end that I think, you know, really needed it. You know, they had struggled for so long to adequately replace Dustin Byfuglien. And I don't even know that they really have yet to this point, even still with the guys that they've added. That's how big of a loss he is. And just a one-man wrecking ball that just can't be, you know, you can't replace with two or three with the style of game that he played and all the skill that he brought. So I think they've taken a step in the right direction in that department with Nate Schmidt and Brendan Dillon. And, you know, do people outside of Winnipeg realize how good Neil Pionk is? Like, I don't think that's the case. And so I just think that at taking a long look at the odds and how everyone views this season shaping up, the Winnipeg Jets at 40-1 to me, like, it was incredible to see them that low. So many teams ahead of them in the Stanley Cup odds that I don't think have a prayer. And yet with the playoff experience that this Jets group has, the hunger, and also being exactly in that proper window to win, you know, I think this sets up nicely for the Jets.
And Frank, to answer your question, outside of Winnipeg, definitely in Duluth, they know how good Neil Pionk is, because we obviously have a few players here in Winnipeg that are from Minnesota and Duluth specifically. But I wanted to ask you about Evander Kane, because, you know, we were talking to Scott Billick of the Winnipeg Sun about him. Of course, the Jets and the Sharks play tonight, and obviously there's a lot of unknowns. We don't know what's going to happen with some of this stuff, you know, in regards to the legal proceedings and everything like that. But, you know, where we stand, you know, right now, you know, in mid-October, like, is there a chance that Evander Kane kind of resuscitates his NHL career? Or do you think, you know, it's looking like there's a good chance that he's played his last game in the NHL?
I mean, there's always a good chance. And I'm a believer in second chances. I think the thing is, you know, let's see exactly what the facts are. There's been a lot of allegations. You know, the NHL properly investigated the gambling claims, and his estranged ex-wife did not participate in the investigation. Now there's been this allegation made in court, which is sort of a different matter, obviously, than one being made on Instagram with the verbal and sexual abuse that was levied towards him. And so the NHL has been investigating that in addition to this idea of a fake vaccine card that was turned into the San Jose Sharks. And so all those things on top of the fact that the Sharks players, as I reported back in June or July, had made it really clear that they didn't want Evander Kane back, that they felt like they couldn't win with him, that there was significant rift and issues caused there, that I don't know that there's a future for him in Winnipeg, in San Jose. If I said Winnipeg, that was just a different sweatsuit story.
A flashback to like 2015.
Yeah, that's stuck on my brain somehow. But going back to San Jose, I don't know if that's possible, but I also don't know what the alternatives are. He does have a contract at this point. It seems like, at least according to the other reporting that's been out there this week, that he's trending towards a suspension from the NHL. And then what happens when that's over? If the contract isn't voided or isn't able to be voided, unless the Sharks decide to just send him home and they're going to pay out the money, which is a pretty big price to pay, well, then my guess is that he finds his way back to the NHL at some point.
Frank Saravelli is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning. You know Frank from his work as a hockey insider and, of course, the president of hockey content for dailyfaceoff.com.
Frank, I would imagine Seattle now is can be taken seriously as a franchise now that they've had their first fan fight in Nashville. I think that was their coming of age. They needed to have that in order to be considered a real franchise. But, I mean, jokes aside, what have your initial thoughts been about the NHL's newest franchise?
I think it's been a pretty impressive first week. I can't speak highly enough of that team and the way that they played on opening night. Really impressed me with just the influx and what was going on in the crazy 40 hours before their first game. You know, coming down with their first case and positive test of COVID, Kelly Yarncroak, and then the close contacts that it involved and the players on their team. You know, at one point, you know, sort of right around the morning skate, as they were waiting to find out more information, their coach, Dave Haxtell, of course, said, you know, these three guys are going to be out of the lineup, unavailable tonight. They end up testing out of the protocol, getting on a plane and getting to Vegas something like 2 hours, 3 hours before puck drop, and they make it into the lineup. Obviously, Vegas, a tough place to go into in general, you know, actually emotionally and intensity wise, but also metaphorically, I think, for this Kraken team, because everything that they do this year, they're being compared to the Vegas Golden Knights and what they did in their expansion year. And so they go into the fortress, it's loud, it's crazy, the best pregame scene in the league, and they're down 3-0. And instead of, you know, packing it in and folding like a cheap tent, they really brought it in the second half of the game. And to tie that game up, and I know they gave up another quick one in succession and ended up losing, but still a nice statement to make in your first game. And then to get the first win a couple nights later in Nashville, this is going to be a difficult road trip for them. They actually, I think they stopped through Detroit, Columbus, and then they're in Philly as well before ultimately heading back to Seattle. I mean, all these things are happening so quickly for this Kraken franchise. They still actually haven't been granted full access to their Climate Pledge Arena yet. They're putting the finishing touches on. They're hoping to get in there Wednesday. There's a concert Friday. The first game is Saturday night. Just a lot going on in Seattle in general. And I think they've handled all those distractions and the excitement that comes with it pretty well.
Frank, you're a Philly guy. So speaking of Philadelphia, I can see Gritty over your right shoulder there. I see the Eagles helmet over your left shoulder there. You know, the Flyers to me are a really fascinating team in that last year.
No fireplace, by the way.
No fireplace, but you know, it's not that cold in Philly yet. No. You know, it's still probably balmy temperatures
on
there.
22 today on the centigrade scale.
Well, you know, that's how we know you still got the Canadian roots in you, is that you can still drop Celsius without batting an eye. My wife is American, and she still says to me, "What's the conversion and everything else?" But yeah. I'll have to give her.
I don't
want to
be that
you.
Guy that's at, like out of place and stands out. So I always try and do the conversion in my head before saying it.
I mean, that's good math doing right there. As you know, what I was saying, the Flyers, you know, fascinating team, I think, this year. A lot of changes up front. I mean, there's no Jacob Voracek anymore. Obviously, Cam Atkinson comes in. They get Ryan Ellis from the Nashville Predators, a team that's really sort of, to me, flying under the radar. Is this a team that could surprise this year if Carter Hart is able to bounce back to the Carter Hart we saw 2 years ago, as opposed to what really was just a bad year for him last season.
Yeah, I mean, that really would be the cure-all, right? Is, you know, Carter Hart bouncing back to the form that he had in his first couple seasons. And I think the difficult part about that is, and I've wrestled, and I'm sure the Flyers and their management group did with it part of for the offseason, is the chicken and the egg argument. The Flyers' defense was so bad last year. They gave up more off the rush than any team in the league, more goals off the rush as a result. And obviously, they beefed up their defense with the guys that you mentioned, Ristolainen and Ellis. Keith Yandle comes in as a power play specialist, all those additions. Mm-hmm. And that's great, but can that help Carter Hart? And how much does it help Carter Hart? And is Carter Hart really just part of, you know, the issue? I mean, again, as much as you guys in Winnipeg are wiping the first game off the slate from Anaheim, for Carter Hart last night in the Flyers, like two really, really ugly goals. One, a bounce off the backboards, should have had a skate on the post. Another one, a goal from the goal line. They just shoveled it towards the net and it ends up going through him. Like the Flyers, it almost felt in their opening game like a repeat of last season where the team's playing fine, but Carter Hart lets them down. And so, you know, maybe they find a way to flip that script. It's not going to be possible without Carter Hart. So I guess to answer your question, can they be a surprise? Yes, but I think they can also be exactly what they were last year, or they could be somewhere in between, which is sort of a middling average team in the NHL. And I just don't know what to make of this team quite yet. So I'm not really, I have them in that 4 or 5 range in the Metro, maybe gets into a playoff spot. Maybe not. If the teams in the Atlantic step up and grab all 5 spots, they're kind of right there in that mix, but they can't be without Carter Hart.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I don't think anybody's going to disagree that, you know, Carter Hart is a big key, and that's why it's nice that, you know, they brought in Martin Jones, who might get more starts than maybe some people thought prior to the season starting. But, you know, Frank, I wanted to ask you about a team that maybe, you know, we don't talk a lot about here, but we've been talking about a lot because the Jets play them, you know, 3 times in the first 6 games or first 7 games of the season. That's the Anaheim Ducks. And obviously, you know, John Gibson was really good in that first game. You could argue that, you know, he was the reason why the Ducks won that game, but he's now out of the lineup, you know, courtesy of, we think it's, you know, the Andrew Kopp run-in. But is that a team that you can see maybe, you know, surprising some people? I think, you know, the Sharks are a team that, you know, their expectations are very low, similar to maybe the Ducks. But watching that team, there's so much good young talent, and they've still got a pretty good, you know, back end. Is that a team that you could see maybe squeak? I realize it's only, you know, the 6th day of the regular season here, mm-hmm. or 5th day of the regular season. But what do you kind of make of this Ducks team? Because I think, you know, their outlook to me looks a lot brighter than the Sharks.
There's no question that it looks brighter than the Sharks just by virtue of not having some of those anchor contracts on your defense. I mean, that to me was one of the real surprises of the offseason, was that San Jose didn't try to move one of those players. And obviously it'd be super difficult to trade an Erik Karlsson, but could you have found value for Vlasic somewhere? You know, why wasn't Burns exposed in the expansion draft? Like, those are all questions that I had for the Sharks in their offseason as they basically ran back the same group from last year that had finished pretty low in the standings 2 consecutive years. With regards to the Ducks, they're exciting, total opposite, youthful energy, all those things that you mentioned. I just don't see them being able to hang on for the long haul. I think they can make the first couple weeks or months of the season more interesting and get themselves in the conversation. But I don't necessarily, even with John Gibson and as well as he played in Game 1, that's a lot to ask because there's going to be a lot of mistakes made, a lot of growing pains. And I think they're trending in the right direction. You know, you just see Mason McTavish getting injected into the lineup. Wasn't sure if he was going to play hours before the game, gets in, makes his debut and scores. And it's, you know, that's an unbelievable shot in the arm for the team and the franchise to see your number 3 overall pick, one of just 2 from the 2021 draft, playing in the NHL this season, you know, when a number 1 and Owen Power goes back to college. And then it was just such an odd draft in general to know that you have something there, something tangible in that pick that you've made, even if he doesn't stick for the entire season, I think just sends a really strong vibe through the group that you need. And so they've got those young pieces to build around, the Sam Steels. I wonder really what happens on the back end, though, with a couple of their guys that are getting a little bit older and that are up for new deals. you know, what happens to a Josh Manson? What happens to a Hampus Lindholm? Do those extension talks, you know, pick up here? And what do those contracts look like? Because they're sort of in that tough middle ground of trying to decide and decipher when they're going to be competitive in the playoff landscape. And then how does that mesh with guys like those two that are getting, you know, right in that 30-year-old range where it's like, well, 3-4 years from now, they're going to be 33, 34. Same thing kind of Ricard Raquel, a little bit younger. That's similar type conversation. Where are they going to be when we want to get to where we're going?
You know, Frank, folks here in Winnipeg who remember negotiating with Keith Tkachuk knew it was not an easy thing to get done sometimes. And over in Ottawa, there was a similar sentiment. It seemed from the outside, at least, that it wasn't necessarily going to get done. There was talk that the Tkachuk camp wanted, Brady Tkachuk's camp wanted a short-term deal. They settled on a 7-year deal. Were you surprised on the term of the deal? And how did you see things playing out there in Ottawa?
Well, I was surprised to see it sort of end the way that it did, that the Tkachuk camp was the one that blinked, because the Sens had been really firm the entire time. And by the way, they had really cordial conversations and discussions. Like, I don't think this ever got to the point where it was nasty. I'd love to know how much they moved ultimately in the end in the last couple of days to get that deal done. Because when you're talking 7- and 8-year deal and the other side just wants something different philosophically in a bridge deal, you've got to entice them, right? You've got to, you know, convince them to come over to your side and make that 7-year deal. And so I'd love to know how many million dollars is what ultimately ended up making it work. But I think he gets a cap hit that, you know, will protect him in terms of future earnings and what the top upper echelon league looks like as an overall market landscape, you know, 5 years from now when he's, you know, still making that number. And I think at 7 years for a 21-year-old, that it allows him to really get some nice security at $57.5 million. You put that in your pocket and then you can go out and chase that next deal at the end of it, still while you're in the relative prime of your career. You're not going to be over 30. It's not going to be difficult to do, I think, based on the way that he plays and the fire and the energy that he brings. So, you know, I think this ended up being a nice compromise. And I think the most important thing for the Sens is the optics of it. Get it done before opening night puck drop. Have him in the building. He's taking morning skate this morning in Toronto. I mean, what's better than that to get your franchise centerpiece forward at the moment? And I say that wink, wink with respect to Tim Stützle. Get him in the lineup as quickly as you can.
Speaking of franchise centers, Frank Saravelli, Hockey Insider, president of content, dailyfaceoff.com. Jack Eichel continues to be the great sort of cloud hanging over the Buffalo Sabres organization. The Sabres and the Coyotes in action in about an hour's time in what will undoubtedly be a barn burner of a contest today. How do you see the Eichel situation playing itself out? Is there a resolution? I know this has been, you know, the topic du jour for basically everybody. Is, you know, you got a guy in Eichel who is not going to play another game for the Sabres. It seems impossible to believe that he will. Needs surgery. It just continues to tick on. How is it going to end and when is it going to end?
Well, I can tell you that the two sides, the Eichel camp and the Sabres, remain pretty optimistic that they can get a trade done. I personally don't see it. I don't know how this works out, because even if you want to trade for Jack Eichel, why would you do so before he has the surgery? Like, wouldn't he go through the surgery on the Sabres dime and then you take a look at what his medicals look like and imaging after the fact? When you're acquiring a $50 million asset, that's personally how I would do business. But it's such a difficult position for all these sides to be in, because Jack Eichel, of course, as you know, wants a really specific surgery. And I'm told that there are teams that are certainly willing to go along with that plan. There were other teams that, having looked at the imaging, also said, look, the artificial disc replacement, that's not for us. We wish you the best of luck. But in this case, you know, I think the other avenue for resolving this dispute is grieving the process. And that's sort of what hasn't been talked about, and the way that that could be pressured here. And again, these two sides have played nice in the sandbox since Pat Brisson took over as Jack Eichel's agent, would be to say, It's October 16th. Jack, we've given you an opportunity here to have a surgery and to better yourself, to get in the lineup. And you've declined to do that to this point based on this medical dispute. So we're going to suspend you without pay for your failure to show up and be in hockey playing condition. And so that's where the CBA starts to get really murky, because we're dealing with an injury that was actually sustained on the ice during NHL play. And it becomes really difficult to wade through the entire grieving process where, you know, at different varying points, while the NHLPA has wanted to have Jack Eichel get the surgery that he wants, their doctors are also looking at it saying, well, we just don't know what the result of the surgery that you want is going to be, because no one's ever done it before. It's been unprecedented to have that type of surgery for a player that's going to go and then resume contact in the NHL. So no one can say with any certainty, and we're stuck in this sort of middle ground, you know, that's not good for anyone. It's not good for the Sabres. It's not good for Eichel. It's not good for the league to have this hanging over everyone's head. So I don't know what the resolution is, but short of either grieving or a suspension, I don't know what could possibly push this forward. And I think everyone was hoping that a trade would materialize before having to do one of those two steps.
Frank Saravelli is the president of hockey content for dailyfaceoff.com. You're doing great work there, Frank. You guys are churning out some great content. I loved the conversation with Tim Peel. I don't know if that was last week or if that was about 2 weeks ago, but it was fascinating to see his perspective as his officiating career came to an abrupt end. Keep up the great work.
Thanks and the for Chris Peters acquisition.
Chris Peters is on board now. You got the
not forgetting about Scott Burnside as well. Yeah,
Scott Burnside. Exactly. I can
keep rattling them off, guys.
it's a who's who of hockey content, and we appreciate that. We had Mike McKenna on. Was that last week? I think we had Mike on
2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago. Okay, so you know you guys are certainly becoming a primary source for us and for hockey fans all around the world. So keep up the great work, and thanks for joining us this morning.
Yeah, thank you guys. My pleasure. And yeah, continue to watch. A big fan of the Illegal Curve, and I'll talk to you guys soon.
Take care, Frank. Thank you. Winnipeg for the Stanley Cup Finals.
Okay, well, I'll be there for all the playoff rounds before then. Don't worry.
There you go, and you won't need the fire. Dave's head won't be on fire at that point in time.
Sounds good, guys. Enjoy.
Thanks Frank. Take care, buddy. Scott. There he goes, Frank.
Pardon me, Frank.
Saravelli. Yeah, I was gonna say thanks.
I really only got Frank. 5 hours of sleep last night, guys. Like my daughter was up at 5:30.
Good thing we're not doing a show tomorrow, as it'd be a complete nightmare.
Yeah, we'll see if he makes it to the post game tonight, Dave. The Vegas has the odds off the board about us getting a text message around 10:30, 11 o'clock saying, guys, I just can't do it. It's going to be the Manuk and Mindell show instead tonight.
But no. I'm going to be ready to go for the post game show, because I'm going to have my secret weapon. Dave has arranged a nice little bottle of Fireball for me. So we're going to be pretty excited tonight.
That'll be great.
I need the music to go along with that.
I'm
joking, by the way, Drew. I'm not going to hit the Fireball. I mean, if this was maybe, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, but as I mentioned a few weeks back, I'm a respected member of society now. I've got
something, all right.
Yeah, it's more likely you're going to have a warm cup of tea and some chamomile or something.
A hot toddy.
Yeah, a hot toddy. That would be delightful. Nothing wrong with that. And the Fireball, of course, courtesy of our good friends at Seagram's. Let's take our final break. When we come back, we'll wrap up Saturday morning and get you set for Saturday afternoon with the Moose, Saturday night with the Jets, and then Saturday night, late night, almost Sunday morning, back with us in the IC postgame show. Much more to come. Stay with us. You're listening, you're watching, you're chatting. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Always a fun morning when we get to spend it with our good friends, Frank Saravelli and Scott Billick. Big thanks to both of them for joining us here on the program.
It's always sunny on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, right, Drew?
It is always sunny on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big day, of course, as we mentioned. The Moose are in action in Toronto. Dave M. will have that covered on his Twitter feed, at IC Dave, and of course on IllegalCurve.com. You'll have all the news from the Jets. It's a morning skate in San Jose. It's an afternoon skate here in the Central Time Zone. I believe they hit the ice, what, about 1:30 our time?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so Dave will have that, of course, on our Twitter feed and on IllegalCurve.com. Want to give a shout-out to the Bombers, victorious again last night against the Edmonton Elks. Yet again, they still have not given up a touchdown in the fourth quarter this season. They're now playoff-bound. They've clinched that playoff spot. Looking forward to what should hopefully be the West Final in Winnipeg. A frigid Sunday afternoon, undoubtedly, that will be.
Are we going to go, Drew?
Yeah, you and I are going to go. We should go have a good time. Reminisce.
I'm serious. I'll go with you.
Okay, good. Well, let's plan it. Dave, you want to
get in? Are they 8-1 or 9-1?
I think they are now 9-1, and they have four games to go. I think they play Calgary, Montreal twice, and is it I don't think it's Calgary twice. I don't know who the other game is against, but they are definitely 9-1, and they've clinched a playoff spot. So
clinched a playoff spot, and also by far the best team in the league. Like, I can't remember. It might be, you know, 20 years ago, the last time this team was 9-1. Like, I can't remember when they've ever been, you know, this far ahead of the rest of the league, which is a great thing. I mean, they're built to win. And Mike O'Shea, I think, is the best coach in the CFL. And obviously, you know, Andrew Harris didn't play last night, so they missed him.
He did, Mike. He got injured. He didn't play the second half. He played the first half.
Yeah.
He got injured on his touchdown catch. It was very bizarre looking. Then he sort of fell into the end zone and got
banged. It was kind of a late hit.
Yeah, the whole sequence, like, he could have walked. It seemed like he was, like, stumbling into the end. Even, you know who he reminded me of? A bit of a stumble bump Ginsburg trying to make his way back to a hotel in Minneapolis a few years ago. But not from a football game, but we were there for a football game.
Did you just call me stumble bum?
Well, you were definitely a stumble bum that evening in Minneapolis a few years back. But yes, I did call you a stumble bum. That's probably the nicest thing I've called you. There you go, Rob Somerville saying it's a Bombers game is against the Lions. So that's their other home game is against BC. They that's play Montreal at home and BC at home, and then they're on the road in Montreal and then Calgary. And there's a bye week mixed in there as well. So the Bombers certainly are
back to back, baby. Let's do it.
Let's do it. Exactly right. They're rolling, and I'll give a shout out, of course, to my own. The University of Kentucky playing against the University of Georgia, two undefeated teams, 6-0 versus 6-0. That's this afternoon. You can watch that game on CBS. I'm very excited about it. The Wildcats, despite being 6-0 and the number 11 ranked team in the United States in college football against the number one Georgia Bulldogs, are 22.5-point underdogs, which should tell you all you need to know.
This is a Jets show, Drew. Nobody cares about college football.
Doesn't matter. I'm the host. I get to drive the bus wherever, which way I want to do so.
You should mention, though,
yes,
that 2021 first-round draft pick Chaz Lucius of the Winnipeg Jets scored his first NCAA goal for the University of Minnesota last night.
It was a nice one, too, Dave.
It was a nice one. And then Nathan Smith, who's the 2018 third rounder? 2018 third rounder, I think. Nathan Smith scored his second game-winning goal for Minnesota State Mankato, the Mavericks, in the last second game-winning goal in the last three games for Minnesota State. They're the number one team in the NCAA. So he's having a good season. He's up to 4 goals, 3 assists. And Chaz Lucius has 1 goal and 2 assists. There's lots going on with the Jets prospects. Dmitry Ryshevsky, the 2021 first rounder, he had another 2 goals in the KHL. I think he's up to 11 goals right now. So a lot of these prospects are rolling right now. We're going to have some prospect reports coming up on allelecurve.com because there's just too many to mention right now. But yeah, there's a lot of exciting things happening. Tyrell Bauer, the Seattle Thunderbirds captain over in the WHL, he had his first goal of the season, which I think was also a game winner for Seattle. So lots going on with Jets draft picks. We'll try and have some updates soon on illegalcurve.com. I have them in the notes usually, but we'll try and have something dedicated to the prospects.
There you have it. Dave Manuk with the prospect rundown. That's it for this Saturday morning. Want to say a big thank you, as I mentioned, to Scott Billick and Frank Saravelli. A big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Zappia Group Realty, Bernstein's Deli, Boston Pizza, and our good friends at Seagram. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Also, our friends at Tough Duck, and who are sponsors, of course, of the post-game show, which will be coming up with you in about 12 and a half hours' time. So go get some rest, everybody. Thank you to everybody who joined us in the chat room. Go get on with your Saturdays. Get a little bit of rest. Maybe take a pregame nap, and we'll see you back here in about 12 and a half hours or so. So for Dave Manuk, the man with his head on fire, for Ezra Ginsberg, I am your host, Drew Mindell. We'll see you soon. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms.
Thanks for listening to this broadcast from Illegal Curve Hockey. For more great Illegal Curve content, subscribe to the Illegal Curve YouTube channel, follow at Illegal Curve on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and visit your online home for hockey in Winnipeg, illegalcurve.com.